Welcome to Getting Down to Brass Tacks for Wednesday, October 3rd. I'm Sanka Price, your moderator for today's program, which concludes today at 1:30 p.m. Dennis Johnson is our producer, technical operator, and the first voice you'll hear when you call us at 434-1790. Of course, you can also participate in the program via WhatsApp at 266-4862. This morning, we have a special guest in the studio, and that is Ambassador Dr. Clyde Maskell. He's the economic advisor to the Minister of Finance, who also happens to be the Prime Minister of Barbados, Ms. Mia Motley. And we'll be looking at the NIS. And of course, I'm sure some of you would want to ask some questions in terms of the BERT program, the Barbados Economic Program. And he will be game. I think he may be here for an hour at least, so that we can get some questions going. Dr. Maskell, good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be back.
Yeah. When I called this morning to see if I could engage you, it related to a WhatsApp message that was being passed around suggesting that we were having a major difficulty here in Barbados. Well, that Barbadians were in for a rough ride in terms of the NIS, and that government really was taking the wrong turn on this. And I wanted to get an explanation from that from you. So I want to thank you for agreeing to even come in on the program to give that explanation to what is happening with the NIS. So what I want you to do for me is to answer first and foremost, what exactly is, how will the NIS fare on this whole debt restructuring program? Will they also be getting a haircut like everybody else? And how could that impact pensions and payments to the average Barbadian?
Actually, the NIS is actually going to come out of the debt restructuring stronger than it was prior to the debt restructuring, because for the last 4 years or so, the government has not been paying the NIS its contributions. So government owes about $460 million to the corporation. Mm-hmm. And the government is not current in its payments. So an amazing thing is going to happen. As a result of the debt restructuring, the NIS is going to be flooded with excess funds as a result of it. But what we need to do before I get into the details is to understand that the last government left the NIS in a very precarious position. They were refusing to pay employer contributions for years. They were taking the employees' contributions and using them for purposes other than what they should have been used for. The NIS was unable to use any of its investment income. Instead, it was forced to buy government paper, debentures and treasury bills, and to lend to bankrupt state enterprises, state-owned institutions, even when it was obvious that there was going to be some kind of restructuring of the debt. And in all this, there was no hope at all for the NIS to invest abroad, to diversify its investment portfolio. In fact, the NIS holds about 90 or 92% of its investment in domestic paper. So what we're seeking to do here as a result of the entire BERT program is to reverse the plight of the NIS. We're going to have to clear the $460 million in arrears for sure. We also have going to have to reform aspects of the NIS doings in order to be able to not to be able to lend, because it would not be able to lend at all to the government over the next 4 years. There will be no new debt in which to invest all this excess, so we're going to have to look critically at that. And then the whole question of the needs, given what we're doing, we're actually ultimately reducing the borrowing needs of the government. So typically the NIS might have had excess funds in which it could then go and invest in debentures and other government securities. That's hardly going to be available given what we're planning to do. And then we have to find other ways, therefore, for the NIS to use its funds to invest in order to make the system even stronger going forward. In all of this, therefore, there is opportunity for the NAS to really come back. It has not been compromised at all as a result of the debt restructuring. And it has options which it can choose based on the legislation that recently went before the Parliament of Barbados. And this will be determined by the needs, the cash flow needs and otherwise of the National Insurance Scheme. In essence, therefore, there can be no fault in that we are actually doing something to help the National Insurance Scheme be in a better position financially than it has been for the last decade or so, but certainly within the last 5 years. So all in all, the talk that you're hearing, typically this is an environment in which some people are seeking to confuse, because having set the house on fire, and now that we have to out the fire, there are some people who still want to participate in destroying the Barbados economy, when it is fully recognized that we have to do something because of the circumstances that we found.
Thank you, Dr. Maskell. Another issue raised by this WhatsApp message, and in fact I saw it raised in the newspaper today too, is the fact that you have an MP, Ian Gooden-Edgell, as the chairman of the NAS, and you have Professor Avinash Prasad, who is on the economic team, and I think he's also the chair of the Financial Services Commission, as the deputy chair. And the suggestion is that is not a good move.
Based on what?
Well, that is the suggestion that has been made, that a case where the government then totally dominates the NAS and the NAS cannot make the sort of independent decisions that they need to make.
Pardon me?
I just wanted you to respond to it because I'm sure people want to know.
Listen, that's absolute rubbish. The first thing is this, man. In small societies, you need to use the resources that you have. And unfortunately, because of the size of the society and because of the nature of politics, you will always get circumstances in which people who identify themselves with a particular party may be perceived as being biased. The reality is that those individuals bring a lot of value, because the same Ian Gooden-Edgell sat on the NAS board for years. And therefore, to be elevated to be the chairman of the NAS board after that cannot be an issue. Well, there's something apparently in Barbados that throws up or attempts to put Professor Prasad in some light. The individual that I've come to know is exceedingly competent, extremely worthy of any position that he holds, and therefore I can't see how you can question a man who has had world-renowned status in other areas. So this notion, therefore, that some people are political and others are not. Being political does not make you biased. I am a perfect example of it, Sanka. I have spoken about the Barbados economy repeatedly, and the perception is that I am a politician, so therefore I'm biased. Time has been my friend, and the reality has come home that we were in a dangerous position or situation now for the last decade, and we responded badly to it. I would like to speak in addition to the NAS to the BERT program.
All right, we can do that, but let's take a call first. This is Brad Stats. Good morning, you're on the air. Good morning, you're on the air.
Calling from, this matter, I'm not calling in relation to the matter that's being discussed.
Not a problem, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling from Pegwell Gardens. We were trying to get you to the water authority, and we tried a number of times this morning. We can't get you, but we have a burst main up here in one of the gaps, and the water's running out in the road. I'd be glad if they can respond to it, because nobody's answering the phone.
All right, Pegwell Gardens
and Christchurch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Burst main in the gap. But y'all have water there, or are
Pardon
the
me?
Is the water low? Is the pressure low, or you don't have any water at all?
We have some water. The water, the pressure is low, but we have water. But the point is, a lot of water is being wasted. It's running from the gap right out in the road, you know?
All right. Well, before you go, let me ask you a question here. Do you have any concerns about the restructuring program? How is it affecting you? What concerns do you have as an ordinary citizen?
Well, the cost of living and, you know, the certain, the gas and so, you know, if I am putting in gas very often now, you know.
Does in your car?
Yeah. But, you know, that's, you know, the fuel, that is one of it. That's one of the changes, you know that.
Yeah.
Since we aren't paying the road tax, you know about the fuel.
Yeah.
Right, but that is one that concerns me, and the total cost of living, because I think people are just seem to be raising prices in the supermarkets and other places.
I see. All right, let me see if we can get Dr. Maskell to respond to that. Thank you very much for your call.
Well, that's a legitimate concern. I mean, I'm a driver as well, so I'm feeling the effects of the price on fuel. But the thing here has always been compliance. You see, it is one thing to introduce a new tax. The other thing is to be able to collect the revenue expected from the tax. And if you look at the reform in the mini-budget of
June 11,
you recognize that there was particular emphasis on widening the tax base, making many hands do light work. In addition to that, to introduce taxes that will be collected. So the thing about the fuel tax is that it will be collected at source. So you don't have to wait to collect it. The thing about the road tax is that compliance was the issue, in that many people might be using the road, but then how do you enforce the payment of the road tax? And from next year, I think people will start to see the benefits of the removal of the road tax. But she has a genuine concern. We thought that the removal of the NSRL, 10%, when it was introduced, the businessmen said that it would cause prices to rise beyond even the 10%. Now it has been removed. You would have expected that there would be some reduction in prices, but apparently the consumers are yet to see the expected reduction. So public policy, tax policy in particular, is extremely difficult to introduce if there is not the kind of response and reaction by the business community.
So how would you respond to a suggestion that possibly because of the same road tax, as well as increases of the, you've changed the income tax ban, you've also looked at, the NAS has gone up and there's a health levy on,
right.
A health contribution on.
Yeah.
There's also the GSE, garbage, sewage, and garbage and sewage contribution.
Okay.
That all of these other little taxes, that what has happened is that they have increased the cost of doing business, and because of that, the business sector has basically, that has nullified, put it this way, it has nullified whatever benefits removing the NSLR would have brought.
Well, again, that's why you need to have what we call microdata, because you can construct a policy from the macro level without fully being able to appreciate its implications at the business level. But the thing here to recognize is that the imposition, we found that government's fiscal position and certainly the debt, they were in much worse positions than we anticipated. And the reason is predominantly this, that the rise in the debt, we were able to witness and to recognize because most times, in fact all times, debt has to come to Parliament for approval, whether you're borrowing locally or you're borrowing from foreign sources. But what was not fully appreciated was the extent of the arrears that government had built up over the last 5 to 6 years. You're talking about close to $1.9 billion that the government refused to pay, either in terms of NAS contributions or supplies that the government was receiving from persons or intergovernmental arrears. So having to add that to the existing debt pushed it in the area of 175% of GDP. We were thinking initially around 150, but that additional pressure caused us then to have to rethink the strategy. So in spite of the budget, going after the short-term effects of revenue raising, which will be immediate, we were still not in a position to bring down the debt ratio. And to make debt sustainable, there's a magical target of 60% of GDP, which we are trying to achieve, so that even after we impose the additional taxes and made some adjustments and give some what we call breakfast in terms of interest, in terms of increases in wages to public sector workers, and also trying to look to get bus stock and sanitation trucks and to look at the issue on the South Coast with respect to the sewage, we still were not in a position where we could reliably bring the trajectory of debt down. And this forced us then to move towards debt restructuring, which again we can discuss a little later.
Yes. 4341790. This is Getting Down to Brass Tacks. We're here with Ambassador Clyde Maskell, the economic advisor to the Minister of Finance, who is Prime Minister Mia Motley. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Make sure that
morning.
Ambassador Maskell will recognize my voice.
Yes, Mr. Transport.
Before we get to that.
How are you doing?
Very cool. You are my friend. You're obviously my friend.
Yeah,
I was a bit disappointed, but...
But such is life.
We are beyond, we are beyond that.
Correct.
Can't deny Bible, everything we wanted to.
Yes.
And I want to say this again. Because they don't support a political party doesn't mean that when that party comes to office as the government they want it to fail.
Right.
Only either will want that, because any government that fails, the people fail.
You're Barbadian first and foremost.
Right. So I want you all to know that when I'm criticizing, try to see if the criticism is just, and if it's just, and I swear that you, but we let people still go input, and they don't think that we should be ignored.
Correct.
Now, I heard talk about making school children pay a bus fare again.
Mm-hmm.
I can agree with it to a point. To me, it was a good idea giving them free bus fares, but it was badly implemented.
Mm-hmm.
I think what should have been done is a means test, and I think it should be done. Because I see a lot of nonsense going on every day. Children walking past, free transport to go and catch that earth. And what is attracting them, and I'm tired of saying this, is the dirty music.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Also, I see that members of the Royal Barbados Police Force should be made to pay by fear. It should be done. If it's an emergency and they say transport more bus or the one government, I don't think you should pay it. But other than that, you should be made to pay back there. All of that is in every little bit count.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's hard to justify, though, because as you know, there's some posts in which you give transport allowance, entertainment allowance. So I don't think that you can suggest that policemen should have to pay bus fare.
But let me just come in here. I'm speaking under correction, but I suspect that at the end of every month, a bill goes to the police for them to actually pay the transport board.
If I
remember
correctly.
He may
have reasons for suggesting these things,
right.
But
they're actually paid.
Yeah.
But just hold on there, Mr. P. We'd have to take a commercial break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Brass Tacks. Sir, are you still there?
Yeah.
Right, good. You were asked, what was your question now? Because you made a statement before, so what was your question?
Well, I'm going to something else, because you know the program has been shortened by half hour, so I'm obvious and things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? I am a very outspoken person. I want the things that I will never be as ever pay. I am not saying the professor isn't a brilliant man, but I have a question. Was he one of those that was involved in Four Seasons? Now, the thing that got me with this Four Seasons thing is that we were told that some of the richest people in the world would have been building houses at that location. If that was indeed so, why should we take up national insurance money to build houses to some of the richest people in the world? I think, in my simple mind, that all that should have been given to the richest people in the world is permission to construct. I don't feel comfortable with the professor being a member of the board. I don't care how brilliant he is. After all the ruckus the millions upon millions that have been poured into Four Seasons, and to this day, we don't know even if they have been repaid, if there's any provisions for it to be repaid. Nothing. National insurance money at the time was not government money. And the people of Barbados have to take a stand against these injustices.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for your question. Then Dr. Mask will answer.
The truth is, Mr. P, I don't engage in looking back too much. And perhaps that's why he was accused of not being a politician. You know, if you had to look back, we were told that we had a buyer for Four Seasons every since. And we were told many other things. So my thing now is to try and get wherever we can to help to reposition Barbados and put this economy in a more sustainable position. Try and get us back to where we were. We've had a lost decade. We've had a decade in which our reserves plummeted from record levels to the lowest ever. We have had from the lowest unemployment rate to a rate in excess of 12%. Our debt was sustainable, it is no longer sustainable. We had an environment in which unemployment was pretty low. So that we were on course at the time, but we have fallen off. And therefore, the focus has to be, how do we reposition Barbados? And this is what the Barbados Economic Recovery and Transformation Plan is about. And I prefer to focus on that.
All right, we take another question. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you.
Morning.
Go ahead with your question, sir.
You there?
Yeah, good morning.
Morning, sir.
Yeah.
The master?
Hi, how are you?
Not bad, sir.
Mm-hmm.
My concern, sir, mm-hmm. is the Pierce High Street bus terminal.
Right.
There you got to go in there, 3 hours, sir.
Yeah.
There before I had to skip 3 hours to there to get a bus to get me home. You think that is right? And they can tell you out there that they don't got nobody to drive the buses?
Yeah.
Huh? Huh? They need the minister to come through there mm-hmm. and see how the bus terminal is. When the days come, see the operation, sir.
Right.
You don't know that someday that somebody can drop down there and die, sir?
That has happened already, sir.
Mm.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
You heard me. That has happened. In fact, I think it happened twice over the last few years.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you never can tell when it happened again, sir.
Yeah. But your concern is...
They need the minister to come through there and see what through the ace.
Yeah. Legitimate concern.
It's going about the same old tip again, sir.
Mm-hmm.
The question really is, what can realistically be done at this point given the financial constraints of the government with the terminal and with really getting more buses?
Yeah, well, the thing is, the entire...
They said about the buses, sir. They said about the buses.
No, let me...
No, they don't have the buses.
No. You, I see where you're going.
Well, they've got buses out there parked up in the bus terminal, sir.
Yeah, but let me think, because don't make it seem as though this is a three-month problem. This is a situation in which, not too long ago, we had as much as 180 buses on the road.
Yeah.
We are now down to 60. And
down
it is because... it has increased in recent times again. But what I'm saying to you, I don't want to get into that political thing, because I'm saying to you that this was happening. And the greatest testimony to what has happened in the transport sector is that not one new bus has been purchased in the last 10 years.
I know that, sir.
Now, how could you have a transport sector in which you have a fleet that is aged, in which is consuming inefficiently the fuel, you've had all these things and you did not pay proper attention to maintaining the transport sector the way that it should have been addressed.
But, sir, the buses that you all repair, the old buses that you all repair,
I see.
You're driving better than the new ones.
Well, again, there was a rejection. In fact, the staff at the transport board told the last minister that he should look to take the older buses, strip them, and use them to supplement a greater fleet, a bigger fleet. And it was rejected as a proposal. I don't know if you can recall that.
And sir, what parts they want, sir, they could get from up in Brazil? I'm sure about that.
and I intimate with it, but I'm saying to you that there was a proposal to do that. Let us take those older buses, recognize that we're in difficulty, recognize we're not purchasing any new buses, and let us use the existing stock to get a better complement by using their parts in order to supplement those that are more able. It was rejected as a policy.
The only thing you can get from Brazil, sir,
is we will get that when we get the money, and that's what we're working towards. And that's why the whole debt restructuring is necessary. And therefore, we are now going to reallocate resources in order to ensure that health, education, and other social services that are essential are provided in this country.
Right.
We have to be back on track. That's the whole purpose of it, ultimately.
Thank you for your question, sir. I think this is a good intro where you can talk more about the BERT program now.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what can we as Barbadians expect?
Well, the thing is that, and there's some over out there who don't like us to go back, but we're here because of inadequate policy. The entire world confronted the 2008 world financial crisis. Barbados responded badly to it. The first thing we did is that we imposed new taxes in 2009 in an environment where there was potential for recession. It is known in international circles, and it's known in economic circles, that you respond by going the route of what we call fiscal stimulus. You do not try to squeeze more out of the economy when it's on its way down. And then what is evident is that the rest of the Caribbean recovered far faster than Barbados. And we have had a decade of 0.5% negative growth compared to the previous decade of 2.5% growth, positive growth. But what really happened is that government was unable to sustain its current expenditure. Now, Sanka, in a household, if you're earning income monthly, you can take care of basic needs, food, utilities, and the like. If you want to expand your house, it is extremely difficult to do so out of your current income. So you typically borrow. And the reason why you do it is because when you renovate that room is going to last you for several years. So borrowing to build an additional room or to expand your existing house is actually the right thing to do, because you can amortize the loan over the years. If you borrow, however, to buy food, you're in trouble. If you borrow to pay utility bills, you're in trouble. So over those early stages, it was evident that Barbados was borrowing to pay wages. Now, this was eventually admitted by the former governor of the Central Bank and by the Minister of Finance. Reality is that we are now in a precarious position, and therefore the BERT program is designed to bring us back to sustainability with reference to our fiscal position and our debt position. And therefore the homemade program, note I said homemade program of the Barbados government, which was recently approved by the International Monetary Fund, was rooted on that premise that we can, as a result of the measures being taken, we can bring our debt to GDP ratio down to a sustainable position of 60% of GDP by in the next 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And consequentially, we are now executing, or we will be executing that program in search for concessional financing, because the last time the government went to the private market internationally, it paid in excess of 11% for a loan. And once we continue to experience credit down ratings, or international credit down ratings, the interest rate went up. So it became inevitable that we needed access to foreign reserves. And in doing this homemade program, we are now able to access additional funding from the likes of the IDB and the CDB, which will then shore up our reserves and also put us on a position where we can resume growth in a sustainable way. That's the essence of the BERT program.
Some people would ask, but you're borrowing money. You're borrowing about $1 billion to deal with all the debt you have.
I'm just giving you
a question that some people would think of, because we have to cover our bases here.
Yeah.
So you're in debt, and you're getting a half billion from the IMF,
yeah.
and then a $500 million from these other institutions.
Yes.
So that's more debt.
No. But
explain.
Let me explain. Right. Because the elephant in the room eventually is the lack of reserves. No Caribbean country can survive without U.S. dollars. Why? Because we import most of what we need. The good thing for us is that most of our debt is local debt. The program, the BERT program, is designed in such a way that we're going to be able to take the excess savings and pay down our debt over the period of the next 15 years to a point where it becomes sustainable. The thing, though, is this. The access to the international monetary finance, monetary funds, resources will serve to protect our reserve stock, but we cannot use them in that way. You with me? What you're really doing ultimately is returning confidence to people who are looking to invest in Barbados, whether or not they're local or foreign. And then the counterpart of this is that the World Bank and the CDB will provide funding that you can now use to do the kind of expansion and growth that you need going forward. So you should not mix up borrowing the size of the debt with the access to $1 billion or so, because, you know, people say, why go through all of this? Why? Because like a pear tree, you only look as though you're bearing fruit, but your trunk is rotten. It will not last. The first high wind and you're gone. So we can't be on that path any longer. It is not sustainable. There's only one way out ultimately of this, and that is through growth. But to get growth, you need to return confidence to the Barbados economy. It has been absent for the longest while.
All right, we take a couple of calls. You're on the air. Good morning, Brass Stacks.
Good morning.
Yes, go right ahead with your question.
Mr. Price?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I would like to ask Mr. Masco, what is happening or what's going to happen concerning these pensions? You know, a couple of months ago, they gave the persons, the non-contributaries, an increase,
right.
And the lowest among the contributory.
Yes.
And what has happened now is that they have gone ahead of persons who have contributed. And I understood that at the time that was the differential was supposed to be maintained.
No. They can't go ahead. What happened is that they came closer, but they could not have gone ahead.
No, sir.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that persons who...
Give us figures. Give us figures. If you say no for a fact, give us the figures.
Yeah.
The non-contributories,
it
is $490
right.
or something like that.
Uh-huh. You go
I don't have it in front of me right now.
Oh, you should,
previously
though.
I had. But I know for a fact that they are getting more than persons like me who is receiving
a contributory pension.
Pardon me?
Uh-huh, go on.
Who is receiving a pension.
Yeah.
And the lowest contributors there are now also receiving more than me who is getting a survivor's pension. I know that for a fact.
Oh, you on to survivor's thing now.
Oh.
Okay, I see. I see what happened, sweetheart. Yeah. Now, let me explain something. When this policy was first put in the public domain, some individuals in the public believe that the government had intended to index the contributory pensions as was the case prior. But what happened is that it was recognized that in the same way in which we needed, after 8 years or so of freezing the public sector wages, we needed to give them something because of what was to come. We felt that non-contributory pensioners needed some boost. But in light of the financial demand it would place on the NAS, we thought that we could not index as was typical in the past. And therefore, we opted that having adjusted the non-contributory pension, we needed to do something with the bottom part of the contributory pension. So the thing is that you can't have it both ways in this country, where people are saying that things are difficult and innovative thinking or creative thinking is now allowing you to make some adjustments, but your lack of finance is restricting you from doing all that you want to do at this point.
So, you see,
and that's the issue.
I understand what you're saying.
Right.
I am also being disadvantaged.
Well, I'm saying you're being. I understand your position.
To make it worse, what the water authority does, because I went and I asked, I get a water bill for 36 days.
Right.
I had to let them know there is no 36 days in a month. So what happens is that the water that you use after a certain amount of time is now being charged at a higher rate instead of being charged at the lower rate, which would be the beginning of another cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I said already on this radio station, and I say again, I don't believe that I should be disadvantaged. There are people who did not contribute, did not.
But you got to be a brother's keeper. You see, what you're saying is this, that let me say something. The
mm-hmm.
person who was below you, who we attempted to bring up,
mm-hmm.
and therefore you look not at your absolute position, but your relative position. It's just that how we discuss poverty.
I cannot go in the supermarket, or I can't go down at the water party tomorrow and tell them, look at my absolute position.
No. Then what are you talking about? What you're saying, my dear,
uh-huh.
is that because that person who was below you got an increase, that you also should have been adjusted. That's what you're saying, right?
Yes, Mr. Master.
You're right,
yes.
And I know that's what you're saying, yes. So you know I admitted it.
Yes.
Right, and therefore you're saying that as a because that individual had an increase, that you too should have had that increase, without respecting that the environment in which we're in is not conducive to giving each and every person the same
Master,
relative
you
increase.
But that I work, and my husband work, and we contribute to this.
Yeah, but you're telling me therefore that you don't feel that if you pass a fellow in the street who is less privileged than you, that you should not make any contribution to that individual.
That's the one time. Why can't I do it now?
You can't do it now.
No.
I see. All right.
Well, thank you very much for your question, and we have to take a commercial break, and we'll be right back.